The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of eKatra AI. Welcome, and thanks so much for joining us. Today, we're doing a deep dive into something pretty fundamental, something that shapes how you trust, how you remember, maybe even how you just ignore the sheer volume of words you see every day.
We're talking about typography.
Exactly. We're pulling insights from Paul Luna's work, specifically his book Typography, and also Typography, a very short introduction.
And Luna's point really is that typography isn't just, you know, picking a nice font. It's actually this highly engineered system. It's under the hood of pretty much all modern communication.
Right.
He argues quite strongly, I think, that if we treat it like some kind of decorative afterthought, we're actually damaging clarity or compromising comprehension.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today really is to unpack why he sees typography as this functional, almost invisible infrastructure that shapes our whole cognitive relationship with text.
Mm. And that infrastructure piece feels more relevant now than ever, doesn't it? I mean, in this digital age, everyone's reading on different screens, responsive designs.
And creating text, too.
Yeah, constantly. Emails, yep. Presentations, social media posts. So understanding how that visual structure impacts our minds, it's not just for designers anymore, is it?
No, not at all.
It feels essential for just, well, critical thinking. For modern literacy, really. Mm-hmm. If you can't sort of read the infrastructure, can you fully get the message?
That's a great way to put it. And if you're looking for a guide through this landscape, Paul Luna is, well, he's uniquely qualified.
Tell us a bit about him.
Well, he's got this interesting combination. On one hand, serious academic credentials, professor at the University of Reading, which is like world-renowned for typography research.
Yeah.
But then he also has deep practical experience. Real world stuff.
Yeah, that practical side really stands out. He spent years as a book designer for Oxford University Press. And this is where you see that functional perspective, I think. He was instrumental, really key in the huge typographic design project for the second edition of the Oxford English Dictionary.
Wow. Just think about that task for a second. Designing the OED.
It's mind-boggling.
It's the ultimate information architecture challenge, isn't it? You've got this immense complexity, dense data, different languages, historical notes, citations.
Everything.
And you need this functional, consistent visual language, this grammar, to make it all navigable, usable.
So that dual role, academic and practitioner, it means he approaches typography less as art for art's sake and more as what? A problem-solving tool.
Exactly. He's bridging the gap between high-level research on how we actually read and the messy, complex problems you face in the real world, like designing a dictionary.
And that practical, functional focus feeds right into the goal of his books, doesn't it? Which seems to be about demystifying typography.
Yeah, he wants to cultivate what he calls typographic literacy.
For who, though? Just designers?
No, for the curious general reader. It's aimed at anyone who needs to get information across clearly. Which, let's be honest,
is pretty much everyone these days.
Right.
So how does he structure this journey for the reader?
It's actually quite elegant. He starts really small, microscopically, and then zooms out.
Okay.
You begin by looking at the individual letter, its anatomy, the building block. Then you expand to how letters form words and text blocks.
Wait, the paragraph level.
Then how those blocks fit onto a page layout. And finally, how you navigate through a whole document like a book. The sequence.
And throughout all of that, the focus stays on.
The reader. Always the reader. Luna isn't really interested in type just for its own sake. He's fascinated by the cognitive side, the perception involved in reading.
So he covers things like, what, the little feet on letters?
Serifs.
Serifs, yes. But also the psychology of how long a line should be, how spacing affects ease of reading. It all comes back to his main argument. Typography is a fundamental tool for structuring human thought. Okay, let's dig into some of those specifics. You mentioned he starts with a core definition.
He does, in the first chapter. He defines typography as the technique of arranging type to make language. Basically, three things. Legible, readable, and appealing.
Legible and readable. I think most people, myself included, probably use those words almost interchangeably.
Yeah, that's common. But Luna draws a really crucial distinction.
Okay, what's the difference for him?
So legibility is purely about distinguishing one letter from another. Can you tell an H from a B or an I from an L? It's clarity at the character level. Think of reading a single road sign that's legibility.
Got it. Individual clarity.
Right. Readability, though, is about the ease of understanding longer stretches of text. How comfortable is it to read a whole paragraph or a whole page.
Ah, okay. So a font could be legible. You can make out each letter, but if the lines are too squished together or way too long, the overall readability suffers.
Precisely. The reading experience becomes tiring, frustrating. You might be able to decode it, but it's hard work.
So legibility is like the minimum requirement, but readability is the real goal for sustained reading.
Exactly. And that distinction really underscores his point that typography's primary job is functional. It serves the content and the reader. It's not just about looking pretty.
Function first. Makes sense.
And to get that function right, you have to nail the micro details. That's chapters 2 and 3, zooming right in on the letter itself.
Okay, like the anatomy you mentioned, things like X height. What is that exactly?
The X height is basically the height of the main body of a lowercase letter, like X or A or O, excluding the bits that go up, like on an H, or down, like on a P.
Ascenders and descenders.
Right. And why does X height matter? Well, a taller X height often makes text seem clearer, more legible, especially at smaller sizes, because the main body of the word takes up more visual space.
Interesting. But you said the real sort of hidden magic happens with spacing in chapter three.
Well, absolutely. The spacing details are critical, and this is where we get into some technical terms, but they're important, like kerning.
Kerning. That sounds familiar. Adjusting space between specific letter pairs.
Yes, exactly. Like the gap between a W and an A or a T and an O, they often need to be tucked closer together optically than the standard spacing allows, otherwise they look weirdly far apart.
Okay. And the other key spacing term.
Leading, which is the vertical space between lines of text. It comes from the old days of metal type when they used strips of lead.
Ah, right. Leading. So kerning horizontally between letters, leading vertically between lines. It sounds, well, a bit dry,
It can
maybe.
sound dry, but Luna argues the cumulative effect of getting these tiny adjustments right is huge. The goal is to create an even pleasing texture in the block of text. He calls it typographic color.
Typographic color. I like that metaphor. What does it mean?
Imagine stepping back from a page of text. A well-set paragraph should look like a consistent, even gray block. Not too dark, not too light, no weird blotches or streaks. If the leading is too tight, it looks dense and forbidding. If the kerning is off, you get distracting gaps between letters. If the word spacing is uneven, you get these rivers of white space running down the paragraph.
Right, those are really annoying when you spot them.
Exactly. That unevenness, that patchy color, trips up the eye. It's like hitting little speed bumps when you should be gliding smoothly down the lines. Achieving that even typographic color signals to your brain, "Relax, this is easy, just read."
So once you've got that smooth block at the micro level, Luna takes us out to the bigger picture, the macro system.
Yes, chapter 4, layout. And the key framework here, the thing that brings order to the page, is the grid.
The grid, like in graphic
Pretty
design.
much, it's the underlying structure.
Yeah.
It creates consistency, order, visual hierarchy. But Lena emphasizes it's not meant to be a rigid cage. It's a flexible guideline.
And grids naturally lead to thinking about empty space.
White space, yeah. And this is crucial. Luna argues white space is often misunderstood as just nothing, passive emptiness.
But it's not.
No, it's an active design element. It reduces visual clutter. It helps define sections. It groups related items. It guides the reader's eye to what's important.
I like the analogy sometimes used that white space is like the silence in music. It gives shape and meaning to the notes, or in this case, the words.
That's a perfect
Right.
analogy. And the amount of white space needed depends entirely on the context, right?
Yeah, so.
Well, think back to that dictionary example, super dense. The grid is used to pack information inefficiently. Minimal white space.
Right.
But now picture a book of poetry, or maybe a high-end art catalog. Lots of generous white space around the text blocks, wide margins.
It feels calmer, more focused, luxurious even.
Exactly. The white space creates atmosphere, signals importance, and focuses your attention.
Yeah.
Context dictates the strategy.
Okay, so we've got micro details, layout. What about how this all evolved? Technology must play a huge role.
Absolutely. Chapter 6 tackles technology's impact. He traces it from, Gutenberg's movable type, which brought standardization, mass
A
production.
huge leap.
Massive. Then things like the linotype and monotype machines in the industrial era, which were all about speed and efficiency for newspapers and books.
And then the digital revolution.
Right. Which brought incredible freedom. Suddenly, everyone had access to thousands of fonts, easy layout tools.
But also new problems.
Big time. Luna points out this freedom created huge challenges in maintaining quality and consistency across all sorts of unpredictable screens, different devices, varying resolutions. the underlying principles didn't vanish.
The context just got way more complex.
Exactly. The need for applying those principles just expanded exponentially.
Which makes navigation even more critical, especially in longer documents. That relates to Chapter 5 on sequence, right?
Yes. For anything multi-page, Luna focuses on how typography helps you navigate, things we often take for granted.
Like page numbers.
Page numbers, folios, absolutely.
Right.
But also running heads at the top of the page telling you the chapter or section. Consistent styles for headings and subheadings so you instantly recognize the structure.
It's about creating predictability.
Precisely. Why is that predictability so important? Because it frees up your brain power. If you don't have to constantly spend mental energy figuring out where am I or what kind of information is this, you can dedicate all your cognitive resources to actually understanding the content.
So good typography is essentially doing organizational work for your brain, making the whole process more efficient.
You got it. Streamlining the cognitive load.
Okay. Stepping back from the details for a moment, let's talk about the bigger themes, the sort of philosophical takeaways from Luna's work. The first one that seems really central is this idea of typography as invisible art.
Mm-hmm. The paradox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That the best typography doesn't draw attention to itself. It's transparent. It's like a perfectly clean window. You look straight through it to the view, the meaning, without even noticing the glass.
It's a facilitator, not the main event, which connects directly to the next big theme, function over form.
Right. We touched on this. Typography as a rational tool, almost like information architecture.
Yeah, its success isn't measured just by beauty, but by clarity and comprehension. If a really elaborate, beautiful font actually makes the text harder to read.
It's failed its main job.
Functionally, yes.
But hang on, what about contexts like, say, advertising or a striking book cover?
Yeah.
Isn't the goal sometimes to make the typography grab your attention, to be visible, even decorative?
That's the inherent tension, and Luna definitely explores it. He acknowledges that form is part of the message. Which brings us to another theme, cultural context and meaning.
Okay, how does that work?
Typographic choices aren't neutral. They carry cultural baggage, associations.
Give me an example.
Okay, think about choosing a classic old-style serif font, like Garamond or Baskerville. What does that signal?
Tradition, authority, maybe seriousness, like in a textbook or a legal document.
Exactly. It conveys credibility, history. Now contrast that with a clean, geometric sans-serif font, like Futura or Helvetica.
That feels more modern, maybe efficient, technological, straightforward.
Right. So the typeface choice itself sends a message, independent of the actual words. It either reinforces the reader's expectations for that kind of content, or sometimes it deliberately challenges them.
Fascinating. And all these considerations, invisibility, function, context, they all seem to point towards the final big theme.
Which is user-centered design. Or maybe just empathy, really.
Empathy for the reader.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, the measure of good typography is the reader's comfort, their ease of understanding. Every choice, font, size, spacing, layout, has to anticipate and meet the reader's needs in their specific situation.
You have to ask, are they quickly scanning a news website on their phone, or are they carefully reading instructions on a medicine bottle where clarity is paramount?
Exactly. The reader's context, their goal, dictates everything.
Luna's writing seems full of these really sharp, concise ideas that stick with you.
It really is. He has a knack for boiling down complex concepts. We could pull out a few core statements that sort of act as guiding principles.
Yeah, let's do that. The first one really elevates the craft, I think. He says something like, typography is the craft of endowing human language with a durable visual form.
Durable visual form. I like that. It positions typography not just as design, but as a vital tool for preserving knowledge, for transmitting it across time.
Yeah, it makes language tangible, lasting. How does that idea of durability play out now, though, in our very ephemeral digital world?
That's the challenge, isn't it? Maybe it means the core principles of clarity and structure become even more important to ensure the message survives across fleeting formats and devices.
Okay, another key idea, almost the typographer's mantra. Good typography is invisible. It allows the reader to focus on the content without being distracted by the presentation.
That perfectly captures the facilitator role we talked about, the ideal servant to the text.
And one more, reflecting on technology. Digital technology has not eliminated the need for typographic principles. It has expanded the context in which they must be applied.
That's so crucial. The fundamentals remain, but we constantly have to adapt their application to new environments, every screen size, every app, every website. The job got bigger, not smaller.
So, bringing this all down to earth, how can you, listening right now, actually use this knowledge? Let's get practical.
Okay.
In your professional communication, think reports, presentations, even important emails, you can consciously use hierarchy.
Making headings bigger, using bold text thoughtfully, leaving enough white space.
Exactly. Playing with size, weight, and spacing makes your documents so much easier to scan, much more persuasive. People can find what they need quickly.
And think about typeface choice for credibility. Using an appropriate font for your resume or your company's branding isn't trivial. It sends a signal about professionalism and trustworthiness.
Definitely. And what about just for yourself in your digital reading?
Don't just accept the defaults. If you use an e-reader or apps for reading articles,
tinker with the settings.
Yes. Apply these principles for your own comfort. Choose a font you find easy on the eyes. Increase the line spacing, the leading a little bit. Maybe widen the margin slightly. You can literally engineer a better, less tiring reading experience for yourself.
It's empowering, actually, taking control of your reading environment.
And thinking more broadly, Luna's focus on typography as a functional, democratic tool has big implications for accessibility and inclusive design.
How so?
Well, if typography is about solving communication problems, then a major problem is ensuring information is accessible to everyone, including people with visual impairments or reading difficulties like dyslexia.
So good typographic practice, clear fonts, good contrast, logical structure isn't just nice to have, it's essential for inclusion.
Exactly. It's about reducing barriers to information.
And finally, maybe the most pervasive benefit, developing critical consumption skills.
Yeah, once you start noticing how clear, well-structured typography often signals professionalism and care.
You also start noticing when it's absent. Chaotic layout, hard-to-read fonts. It can be a red flag, can it? Maybe the thinking behind the text is just as messy as its presentation.
It equips you to be a slightly more discerning consumer of the information deluge we all face daily.
So wrapping up, what's the one thing that really sticks with you from Luna's perspective?
For me, it's how effectively he argues that the visual arrangement of text isn't just decoration. It's not optional.
Yes.
It's a fundamental part of the communication itself. It's like a functional grammar for visual language.
Mm.
We have to learn to read it, not just the words.
Yeah, that's powerful. What surprised me most, I think, was drilling down into those seemingly tiny details, kerning, leading, excite, things that sound almost obsessively technical.
Uh-huh.
But realizing how those minuscule adjustments have this profound cumulative impact on how easily and comfortably we read,
yeah.
It really changes how you look at a page of text. You go from just passively absorbing it to actively seeing the structure, the choices behind it. You become a more critical reader.
And that's why typographic literacy, as Luna calls it, really is essential knowledge for everyone today. We need to see that invisible infrastructure.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.